Here's May.
Good evening. This is May Brussel in Carmel, California. It's broadcast number 454. We number them each week. It's May 16th, 1982. This evening on 60 Minutes on CBS, Dan Rather had a gentleman who was investigating Nazi war criminals in the United States. And this fellow who lives in Boston left the investigation for the government. He was disgusted with what he saw. I tape recorded and will write up the broadcast for so I can give you more details later next week, possibly, on this broadcast. But I took notes while I listened to it. And what this gentleman was saying was that the United States government knowingly brought into this country mass murders, people responsible for large amounts of killings, killing Russians, Jews, people in Europe, throughout Europe. They were brought to this country, 200 to 300 of them, by the Pentagon, by approximately 22 agencies of the United States, the State Department, the FBI, the military, the Pentagon, brought these mass murders into the United States, and they gave a few examples of their working for Radio Free Europe. These people were not supposed to come into this country. The allegations were, the charges of this investigator were, that President Eisenhower and President Truman said no war criminals into the United States. But the federal government knew they were war criminals. They were open about what they did. They worked under a Department of Office of Policy Coordination, OPC, that was set up several months before the CIA was formed. There was a time period when the war was over in the spring of 1945, May the 8th of 1945, until the CIA was formed in 1947, where large amounts of scientists, people from Germany, from Nazi Germany, the SS, were brought to the United States. They were working with Alan Dulles out of Bern, Switzerland, and they fled to the United States, and the government here knew that they were war criminals. Now, he mentioned that they came through Alan Dulles, and their boss was Frank Wiesner, who was in the OSS, worked under Wild Bill Donovan. And there were three people that he mentioned that were responsible for this operation. One was C.D. Jackson from Time Life. The other was Nelson Rockefeller. And the third was Vice President Nixon. Now, the first role where I became aware of the Nazis using this country or taking over this country and affecting domestic policy, not only what happened inside the Soviet Union, and they went on to things like Radio Free Europe, propaganda in the Soviet Union or dropping people behind the iron lines in the Soviet Union that had been formerly in Minsk and so forth. The first recognition that I had that Nazis had literally taken over this country were those that appeared in the 26 volumes of the Warren Commission hearings and were carefully covered up by Alan Dulles, who was appointed to the Warren Commission to be in charge of the conspiratorial aspects, if there were any, to the murder of the President of the United States. Now, Time and Life had those pictures of Lee Harvey Oswald with the rifle, the superimposed head, the lies about the assassin, the patsy on the cover. Nelson Rockefeller wrote the IDs for George de Morenchelt when he was traveling around Mexico and around at the time of the Bay of Pigs down in Central America and in the Dallas-Fort Worth area with a whole group of Hitler's Reinhard Gehlen agents in the Dallas-Fort Worth area and in New Orleans that worked with Lee and Marina Oswald. George de Morenchelt carried an ID from Nelson Rockefeller for checks if he wanted them or money when he was traveling. And de Morenchild was familiar with Nelson Rockefeller, and it was Chase Manhattan, the bank that John J. McCloy was one of the directors of. He was also director of the Schroeder Bank, Adolf Hitler's bank, simultaneously. And John J. McCloy from Nelson Rockefeller's Chase Manhattan was on the commission, not only the Warren Commission, and covered up the role of Lee Harvey Oswald. His assignment was the Soviet group, and Lee Harvey Oswald was in Navy intelligence in the Soviet Union, and John J. McCloy from Chase Manhattan working for Nelson Rockefeller. He's still the elderly senior attorney. He's still existing in New York, an old man now, but he did a lot of damage. He released the Nazis that were at Nuremberg from prison and let them all go after just a few years in prison. There were a few that were hung and the rest were released. and Hallmar Schacht, the head of the Reichsbank, and so forth, were released. Now, in 1972, when I published Why Was Martha Mitchell Kidnapped, it went into the links of Richard Nixon bringing the Nazis into this country in Long Island, and that's how his career began. And for all purposes, I've never seen any article published in the United States or anywhere else in the world that linked Richard Nixon to the importation of Nazi war criminals into the United States. If you can find it, mail it to me and show it to me. And if not, I'll send you a copy of, I can't copy the whole Realist article, it's a long one, but the pages on how Richard Nixon came to power, and it had to do with his role in Long Island and in the Navy, and then running against Jerry Voorhees in Congress, who was exposing I.G. Farben and trying to break up the Nazi interest. So that the representatives from Time magazine, Nelson Rockefeller, and Vice President Nixon is completely consistent with the research that I've done for the past 16 years. Now, why are these people important? They're important because they have affected everything in our country. They didn't just help us find out what Russia was doing or to inform against Russia, maybe wanting to expand. They have affected our money and our banks. They have bankrupt our country, and a lot of the money, millions and billions, is out of the country in terms of gold and diamonds. They have bankrupt us. They have polluted our rivers, our waters. They've been behind the mind control programs. Wherever I do research, whether it's the John Kennedy assassination or Martin Luther King or Robert Kennedy murder, there were Nazis. When they investigated Jonestown, there were Nazi connections. When you go into Watergate and Richard Nixon, it was filled with Nazis. When you study the medical experimentation, the Nazis were behind it. The mind control programs, the same thing. The banking, the taking over the energy, raising our prices and putting us on an energy shortage and no alternative energies or solar energy. There were always Nazis behind it. The appointment of Ronald Reagan as governor and his role with the Hoover Institute and the Tsarists, Nazis again. Richard Nixon, of course, there were Nazis. Everywhere I look, everywhere you turn, whether it's Edwin Wilson or Frank Turple arming Idi Amin, who adored Adolf Hitler, or Gaddafi, or the role of Otto Skorzeny working with the CIA, training the Middle East, arming the Middle East against Israel, there were Nazis. If there's food pollution, poison, housing problems, unemployment, murdering of laborers, it's the same thing. The courts in this country are ridiculous. They are delayed cases, those ridiculous trials about John Hinckley and the hearings on Sirhan are a farce. The shooting of the Pope, not the shooting, the attempted stabbing of him this week because he was too far left. A rightist, again, who doesn't like the comments on the Pope's if he gets sympathetic to the poor, and they tried to kill him again this week. The religious cults, the control of the Vatican, the passports for the Nazis, the use of the Mormon Church to hide them. Every stone that I ever unturned in the past 17 years goes back to these people. Now, that broadcast tonight was just about 200 to 300 that came in here knowing what they did. But they didn't just, as I say, advise us against Russia. They have taken over this country, and I'm working harder every day, as much time and energy as I can put into it, to prove this to you with the names and places and dates that they met. And I'm going into an article, important one, on the John Kennedy assassination and the role of Hitler's agent, one of the agents, and there were many, in a few minutes. Before I get into that, I just want to say that Peter Weiss passed away this week. There's so many current deaths happening, we don't know whether they're natural or murders anymore. This was a valuable man, a playwright. He lived in Stockholm, Sweden. He wrote the story of Murat Saad. That play is very famous. In 1965, he wrote The Investigation, based on the trial of Nazis who operated the Auschwitz concentration camp. He has a play in Sweden now called The Trial, based upon Kafka's play. He's written other plays on Trotsky and Exile, Vietnam Discourse, where he condemned American military intervention in Southeast Asia. Somebody from Kansas City called me this afternoon and asked me, who are my heroes? There's some playwrights that I like very much. One of them is Peter Weiss. He was consistent through his whole life. He passed away. He dramatized a lot of Bertolt Brecht's things, and he was a very powerful playwright who took on from where Bertolt Brecht left off. Peter Weiss and the investigation and his other plays are some of my favorites. I have them at the house. Another playwright that I like, who I respect very much, like Costa Gavras as a movie maker, is Frederick Durenmont. And Durenmont wrote the play The Visit. And in the San Francisco Chronicle today, there was a review of his play that just came out recently in 1979 that's playing in San Francisco, and I'm going to try and see it. It leaves June 20th, so I'll see it before then. It's called The Accident, and his plays are very powerful. I won't go into The Visit now, but read you just in the review a few sentences of what one of the players is saying in this thing on the accident, the story of society and the problems we're in. The review of the play and the lines in the play go as follows. He sees some sobering parallels between the play and the conditions of contemporary life. And this is a quote of one of the actors. We live in an absurd world full of meaningless happenings. In this play, this is the main actor saying, ours is a world where responsibility is no longer accepted, yet where the most despicable acts are committed because they are supposedly necessary, either to keep the world from changing or to force the world to change. And in the midst of this monstrous mudslide, where everyone uses the prevailing injustices to excuse himself, a man who owns up to his guilt deserves to be rewarded and celebrated. His reward is a death sentence. It's a worldview, said one of the actors, where Durenmont believes there's no such thing as a better world anymore. It's just that we're not likely to get it because we've left way behind us the necessary requirements that were never fulfilled to make it right in the first place. We left behind us the necessary requirements. We were never fulfilled to make it right in the first place. And by now, they're so far behind us, we wouldn't know them if they walked up and shook hands with us. Durenmont was said, you might as well build your bomb shelter because everything will blow up soon. Where did we goof in this country? What did we leave behind? I believe our treatment of the American Indians, what we did and what we do today, our importation of blacks as slaves, the way we treat them, and the way the administration and the government is going to handle them today, in our desire to stop the Soviet Union after World War I, 1918, 1919, when Herbert Hoover was president, he had to stop that socialism. He wasn't president till later, but he was a dual citizen between London and England and the United States, and he had tremendous investment of millions of dollars in Tsarist Russia. And he wanted his money back, along with the world leaders. He needed that God to justify what they would be doing to native populations around the world. Great Britain certainly took their territories and countries and brought opium to China and slavery to Southeast Asia and over the entire world. Wherever they touched, their colonies were literally imprisoned with native population while the British became rich. And the United States took up that stronghold of the empires after World War II, we tried to take off where they left off. In order to stop Russia from growing, the idea of socialism from growing, to keep the world from changing, where the so-called third world or the masses would stop being starved or mistreated or abused, in order to force changes our way, like we did in the Orient and China, in the Middle East, South America, Central America, the United Fruit, our corporations, the ITTs, we don't want Pinochet. We want Pinochet in power. We don't want Allende. Kill Allende. You don't like Trujillo? Kill Trujillo. You don't like Mossadegh? Kill Mossadegh. You don't like Lumumba? Kill Lumumba. The United States has been doing that since World War II, and they got away with it. And the citizens have allowed it. And the problem is, as Durenmont says in this play, it's gotten out of hand. You wouldn't even know. We're so far behind with what we did, you wouldn't even know it if it came up and grabbed you. Well, the headlines of the paper just this week or today, one of them is, United States could retaliate after Soviet first strike. Wouldn't we be lucky? Another war article, Reagan's nuclear plan. The Soviets can cut their arsenal now or pay later. And Ronald Reagan says, you have your choice. You either face the new arms race and cut it down because otherwise you can't win, he tells them. How does Reagan know they can't win, and why do we allow this? War stories, there was the Noah's Ark expose this week in the Los Angeles Times telling how the old people, the parents, the sick, the maimed, will not be allowed to survive. They've selected the people with trades and skills and characteristics that are for the future, and the military makes the decision for us. That's called Operation Noah's Ark, and they have lists of people who will be allowed to live and those who won't, and they'll get rid of a lot of the surplus just as Hitler planned. Another story along those lines, it was Pete Hamill's story on our strength is our weakness, on the fact that American money, the whole Army and Navy are unproductive. We use laborers for things to make that we can't use later. The nuclear weapons are stored. We can't live off of them. The unemployment is so excessive because we could put more people into housing and skills and jobs if they weren't doing military. And then he goes into the inflationary problem that's been brought out in Wall Street Journal over and over on the military spending, the inflation producing, that nothing comes from it. And in Japan, 2% is spent on weapons, and the best scientific minds are on producing consumer goods that benefit Japan all over the world. But in the United States, more than 50% of the American scientists and engineers are employed in the defense racket. Well, the defense racket is what the Germans and the Americans gobbled up, brought these Nazis into this country, and fed their own coffers. They all live well, have great homes, and have built this military up as their profession to get America into another war. Pete Hamill closed the article by saying, if Reagan doesn't begin a process soon to stop all of this, the economic collapse of our automobile industry, our housing, and so forth, if he doesn't stop this, we will topple into a catastrophe, and the old actor, Reagan, will be groping for a script that none of his advisors know how to write. Now, I think America has been taken over by outside forces out of the country, South America, Central America, Middle East, Asia, the Orient. And this, what was happening to us is intentional. And furthermore, with their intent, we have allowed it to happen. Pete Hamill said, Americans should be able to force Ronald Reagan and his true believers to begin a process of compromise with the Soviets. Well, where are the Americans? The Americans are not Americans. There are Germans in the Defense Department, in the State Department, in the CIA, Navy intelligence, military intelligence, during the war, continuously now, where the Americans aren't even there, anywhere even from Helene Von Dahm, who's watching the White House for Ronald Reagan, and the teams that put her in, those were not American-born. Americans are not running this country, whether it's the chief historian of the Pentagon, Mr. Whitaker, he's from the OSS, he's from Germany. The Americans are not around. Now, this week, there was an article along with the Hinckley stories. They did some more acoustical findings on the Kennedy assassination, and whoever this group was, the National Academy of Sciences, comes out with a story chaired by Dr. Norman Ramsey of Harvard University that there was no second gunman, or the sounds didn't reveal a gunman over the grassy knoll. Well, who needs Dr. Norman Ramsey from Harvard University that produced Priscilla Johnson, who worked with Lee Harvey Oswald, and Henry Kissinger of the War Machine? Who needs him to tell us what happened at Dealey Plaza? Doesn't he take into account that there were silencers? The conclusion of their great finding was that the acousticals originally were wrong by the House Select Committee, but they did say Dr. Frank Press, the president of this Academy of Science, cautioned in a statement that the committee only looked at acoustical data and could not comment on other evidence that might indicate an assassin on the grassy knoll. Well, you better believe that one, and that still leaves the door open, thank goodness. Another article over the Associated Press, second Kennedy killer is doubted, but they're still not sure. And the National Academy, the National Research Council, listens to these tapes. How many years, every 17, 18 years, they're going to listen to those tapes over and over again? The tape isn't important because the very makeup of the Warren Commission with Alan Dulles from the Chase Manhattan, the OSS, the CIA, John J. McCloy, and the who's who of the CIA, Mr. Russell of Georgia, the watchdog of the CIA in the Senate, Senator Russell, the whole cast of characters on the Warren Commission, including Gerald Ford, covered up the continuous Nazi connections to the Kennedy assassination. So if you want to go back to what happened to John Kennedy, you have to go to the bringing over to this country of Reinhard Gehlen's chief of Hitler's chief of intelligence, Reinhard Gehlen, and what happened in the United States. Now, the important article that I received this week from David Emery, a World Art Watcher up in the Bay Area, is from a magazine called Gung Ho. It's similar to Soldier of Fortune. And it came out this month, May 1982. And we'll have to get that magazine. He sent me several articles from this magazine. One written by William Seymour, but it doesn't say if this is the William Seymour who was Lee Harvey Oswald's double at Dealey Plaza and in New Orleans and in Texas and in Mexico, or whether it's a different William Seymour. But another author in this magazine is also associated with the Kennedy assassination, and he sent me this because the footnotes, I'll go into that with you, is a important person who was playing a role at Dealey Plaza also with John Kennedy. There were two people there, and this particular article was written by William Seymour. It's called The CIA's Man for All Nations, not just the United States, all nations. That's what it's called. And it begins by saying, this William Seymour, that he was in the Bay of Pigs operation in April 1961, and that he acted with a Captain William Rhine, who he knew as his officer in the Defense Department. The man who was head of him in the CIA operation was a Captain Rhine. I was a sergeant, Seymour said. And this William Seymour, involved with the Kennedy assassination, was in the Bay of Pigs. And this officer, Captain Rhine, was his officer for the Defense Department. Now, in 1979, William Seymour saw an article in Newsweek. And he read this article, and he recognized the picture of the man, but the man was identified as Rolf Mayer, M-A-Y-E-R. And he's described as a European mercenary officer, but he knew him in the Bay of Pigs. So he said he called the Pentagon, he called the CIA, and he wanted to know who William Rhine was, or Rolf Mayer. And he said, 2 months of letters, telephone calls, threats from the Army, visits from the federal government, letters threatening him from foreign governments, and so forth. And all of a sudden, there was a voice on the line, and the man identified himself and said that he was the person in charge of one part of intelligence of the Bay of Pigs operation, that he was a career officer in Spain in the German Army, that he used many, many aliases. One was Rolf Mayer, one was Captain William Rhine, but he was Helmut Streicher, S-T-R-E-I-C-H-E-R, and he worked for Adolf Hitler. He was in the German Army. He was a German officer in Spain in 1938 in the Civil War there, and he was a double agent working against the rebels and the Abraham Lincoln Brigade, the people fighting Franco. He was a double agent then, and he was a double agent all of his life. He retired, according to this account, in 1980, but has worked with the CIA. His real name, according to this article, is Helmut Streicher, S-T-R-E-I-C-H-E-R. He holds many passports, ID cards, 9 other identifications and nationalities, a professional spy, and he started working for the United States government in 1945. Now, the war was over in May of 1945, and by October of 1945, he was working for the government. He worked with Hitler in the Eastern Division, in and out of Russia and Europe. He was in the Middle East. He was living in Israel. He was helping trying to kill Castro, and his who's who, his biography is a frightening account how a man who worked for Adolf Hitler was working in the United States Army at the time of Bay of Pigs and had been operating with this government continuously. Now, Helmut Streicher was born in 1918, He was in the Spanish Civil War. This is in 1936. He was first in Africa for Adolf Hitler in 1936. Then he went to the University of Danzig in Bonn. He graduated. He went to a military school where they trained for the allegiance of belonging to Adolf Hitler for a lifetime. It's similar to like the Hitler Youth. He went to this special training. It was a castle, a war school that he went to in Germany in 1937. In 1938, he was 21 years old, and he was working as a double agent as a Nazi, working inside of Spain. In 1939, he came to the United States, 1939 to 40, where he learned his English and learned it well. Of course, these are the years when Henry Kissinger came to this country, and Kissinger in 43 was naturalized and ends up in the Battle of the Bulge, where Stryker is this man, just as the Fritz Kramer I've been talking about on these programs and will do much more on in the weeks to come. He goes back to Hitler's Third Reich. His cover always is a journalist in the United States in the Spanish Civil War, which is interesting because Hitler's main henchman, his most strongest anti-Jewish henchman, who was tried at Nuremberg and who was supposed to have died in Nuremberg, was Julius Streicher. And the only difference here is about a five-year age difference. If he has all these passports and all these names, and he's been a writer and a journalist, it'll be interesting to see the pictures of the account, how that other Streicher at Nuremberg died, or even if there's a remote chance that this is the same man who was behind all of Hitler's extermination plans and counterintelligence. But given the name Helmut Streicher for right now, he was in Europe in 1943 under the name of Rolf Mayer. He was involved with Otto Skorzeny in the Battle of the Bulge and with Rommel and Nazi teams in 1943. In 1944, he was in Madrid with the Nazis and with Canaris. And in 1945, the war was over. May the 7th, 1945, he surrendered to British intelligence. Now, he turned himself into the British intelligence at this time period and started working for the United States government in G2 Army Intelligence. As soon as the war was over, I'm not talking about the 200 or 300 that were brought in that were on 60 Minutes discussed those war criminals or mass murders. As soon as the war was over, he was in our Army Intelligence and promoted. He had just been promoted before the end of the war, and by October, he was working with the OSS and the Central Intelligence Group. That was the precursor to the CIA. It took from the end of the war till 1947 to form the National Security Council and the CIA, so that this Streicher was working with Alan Dulles and the same people that I've been studying all these years through 46 and 47. In 1948, the CIA is formed, and he begins then his long work for the CIA, but he was hired from the time the war was over for the Central Intelligence Group. Again, this is the Dulles Group. In 48, 49, and 50, he was in Europe and Africa, in the Middle East, and those are the years when Otto Skorzeny was arming Nasser and Sadat, his intelligence chief, to get ready on wiping out Israel. Israel became a country in May 8th of 1948, and that's when Nasser and Otto Skorzeny and the very people who were working with Helmut Streicher were down in the Middle East. He was in the Middle East, and he also was in Israel. Now, these top Nazis, double agents, there's so many of them in Israel, and Mossad is supposed to be the greatest intelligence group in the world. I have contended for a long time that 50% of the top people in Israel are Nazis running the government, and this guy was in Israel during this time period, 48 to 49 to 50. In 1956 and 1952, he started working again for Reinhard Gehlen, Hitler's chief of intelligence, who was through setting up the CIA in the United States and went back to head up the German intelligence. Our government worked with Hitler's intelligence chief, and I've mentioned him many, many times through the years, and he helped set up operations in Eastern Europe. He was in Prague in 1954 when Otto John was kidnapped. I have books and pictures of Otto John. He was a German who His family opposed Adolf Hitler, who didn't like the persecutions. He was supposed to help select people in government who were not former Nazis. And, of course, he was the arch enemy of Reinhard Gehlen, who was the top Nazi before and after the war with Hitler and after with Alan Dulles. And Otto John was kidnapped and taken to the Eastern Berlin, and then he was put on the TV and made to look incoherent and made to sound like he was a Nazi. I compared the Chappaquiddick affair and the reaction of Ted Kennedy to his TV conference to Otto John and the similarities in that case. This fellow was operating and helping to eliminate the credibility of Otto John while he was working for Reinhard Gehlen. He was in Prague. 1956, he was continuing. 57, he was working for Gehlen. He had to go to Eastern Europe to kill a man named Mr. Geyer, who was exposing the top Nazis in the government and had gone to Berlin and given it to the Russians. So in this article, it tells how they arranged to kill him with a silencer. See, this team knows how to use silencers, except when they want to investigate the murder of John Kennedy. In 1958, he comes to the United States, and he works with the CIA and United States Army Intelligence. And 59 and 60, he's preparing the invasion of Cuba and the death of Fidel Castro. We'll take a one-minute break and get back to the role of this person with Hitler and the United States Army simultaneously.
This concludes the first half of World Watchers International with Mae Brussel. We will return with the second half after a brief pause.